Hour number two kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Sam, catch us up on some other stories from the weekend.
Thank you, John.
We caught about last night. You're welcome.
Last night. Baseball America just dropped their updated top 25. We got a new number one. Tennessee Vols land at number one, according to Baseball America. Texas A&M number two. Arkansas three. Clemson four. Florida State five. To round out the top five, you'll get Kentucky at number six there. Vanderbilt drops out of the polls, and you'll get another team, Georgia, rising up to 14. They just swept Vandy, run rule them twice, so they take a climb up into the rankings, but Tennessee now ranked number one, according to Baseball America.
All right, so the number one curse is just the overall number one seed, right? And there's a possibility that Tennessee is like the number one team in the country, but not going to be the number one seed in the country, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe we could just be the number one team for the polls and then like not actually number one when it comes to the curse. Can we do that compromise?
I think that's fine. That's good with me.
Okay.
That's good with me.
I feel like that's a decent compromise.
I think that's pretty fair.
Because that's what the curse is, the number one overall seed, right? It'd be really funny if Tennessee was number one, then like number eight in terms of seeding, which is where the RPI has them set up.
It'll all settle down. The dust will settle somewhere.
Now, we never got to number one in basketball this year, right?
No.
What was the highest we got?
I want to say four.
Yeah, that sounds okay. Right to me. I don't remember even getting inside the top three, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just wondering for top ranked.
Yeah, I mean, we're just really good at everything. Yeah. I know we keep talking about that. The softball team, you know, won the outright SEC championship.
Mm-hmm. Back-to-back SEC titles.
Which, that was historic, right? I don't think they had said really any team had finished SEC champions back-to-back years. You shook your head, Jace. Do you know that, or were you wanted to add something there?
No, I just saw posted that it was the first time they'd ever done that, where they'd gotten back-to-back SEC.
That Tennessee had.
The Lady Balls have done, yes.
Okay. Okay, so maybe not first time in SEC history. Maybe it was just first time a Tennessee team had done it. I couldn't help but think, like, yeah, it's nice, but Texas and Oklahoma are going to ruin that when they come next year.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, we're just really good at everything.
We are.
And it's nice to be ranked number one. I know we keep talking about it. You eventually got to win something of substance and win a national championship to break through. Yeah, LSU won four in a row in the late 90s, so yeah, it was not the first time that it happened. Florida won 08-09, Bama 10-11. Florida won four in a row from 15 to 18, too, so yeah, never mind.
I know Danny White tweeted something out, though. I don't know how recent it was, but it felt pretty recent. It was just like every ranking of our sports right now, and it's all just – everyone's in such good standing.
The football program is in last right now, I would say.
Yeah, almost, yeah.
Well, I mean, if you count women's basketball, like, sure, women's basketball is last. But, like, the football program didn't pull their weight last year.
Yeah.
Now I'll get back. You know, I anticipate Tennessee football getting back to being in that mix this year.
Hope so.
Number one.
Hope so.
Feels good, man.
We're number one, Bob.
I know.
Numero uno.
Baseball teams ranked as high as our show.
There you go.
That is true. We are the number one morning show on Fan Run Radio.
There you go.
That is true.
Some racing stuff. Lando Norris grabbed his first F1 victory yesterday, coming over Max Verstappen, obviously, who just dominates F1, it seems like. But they had the Grand Prix in Miami. McLaren got their first win in the United States since 2012. Big one for them. It seemed like everyone in F1 was just celebrating for this guy because I think Verstappen just didn't win. I think everyone's tired of Verstappen winning.
Lando's nickname is Lando No Win. He's just come close so many times. So yeah, he's a really popular driver, and I think anybody that unseats Verstappen, even if it's for a week, is that's a big deal these days.
Yeah,
because I do think that's becoming a problem for F1. It's becoming a little uninteresting for that reason. The only reason I watched some of that race yesterday is because it was in Miami, you know. So it came on after the NBA game. It was just there. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say the start seemed electric as they kind of raced out to see who would get in the lead. And
yeah,
it was a cool moment there as, you know, they dropped the green flag and somebody shut off to the beginning. I was like, okay, that's enough F1 for me. I'm turning the channel now. But I did watch that. I did watch them drop the flag and have that first little 10-second burst.
Well, you might have had enough F1, but did you have enough NASCAR, John?
I didn't watch any NASCAR. I told you I've boycotted, although I did see that they had the closest finish in history as Kyle Larson.
Wins by a millisecond.
Wins by a millisecond. Okay, I didn't see. I thought it was a thousandth of a second, but.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm blocking out a zero with my mic here.
Okay.
You are right. No, yeah, incredible finish. Cars-like finish. I think he tweeted out. He was like, I need to stick my tongue out next time.
It was a good weekend for racing between that and the Kentucky Derby. I mean, two just electric finishes.
Mm-hmm. Photo finish in the Derby as well. Mystic Dan won by a nose. I got screwed.
Oh, no.
I had Sierra Leone on the comeback.
How? You got an illegal bookie, Sam? Because horse racing is not illegal. It's not legal in Tennessee. You can't do that.
Yeah, you can. Keeneland Select, baby.
Wait, what? Is that like just a horse racing like app or something?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Twin Spires, too.
Yeah, Twin Spires works.
Okay. I was going to say, I know that like the FanDuel, DraftKings, Caesar, they can't do horse racing there.
I've been seeing promotions for DraftKings like building a horse app or something like that.
Really?
Then it didn't work in some states, which seems pointless, but...
Well, I know Tennessee, like, it's one of those prop things you can't bet on, I guess.
Is that considered a prop?
I don't know if it's falling under the same rule, but, like, yeah, like, kind of how you can't bet on college players, they have outlawed, like, horse racing, too. It's not offered on the apps.
Interesting.
Yeah, I tried on FanDuel first, and then I remember, because I got blocked, I remembered I had a Twin Spires account, so I dug that up.
Mm-hmm.
Took Forever Young, finished in the top three.
Okay, let's go.
I didn't watch it.
You didn't watch it?
No. I was going to turn it over, like, during the Tennessee baseball game. Like,
yeah.
I had it on my TV, and, like, the announcer was like, you know, they're getting ready to run the race. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's, like, 6:57. But then I was like, oh, I got the app on the TV. And I was like, I can't take the app down because then it'll, like, buffer and freeze, and then it'll take forever to get back in. I was like, do I pull it up on my phone? I was like, ah, never mind.
You don't have enough time because it's a horse race.
Right, it's a minute. Long, yeah. It's a minute, right? It's the fastest minute in sports. So I was like, I don't. It's fine. I'll just see who wins. And I saw the video of the stretch, but, like, I didn't have any money on it, so, like, I didn't care.
Yeah.
So, like, I have any investment in these horses.
Yeah.
They are majestic. My friend was there.
My buddy went, too, and he said it was terrible.
He said he had a miserable time, too.
Yeah, he's like, this is the worst sporting event I've ever been to.
He said if he ever goes back, he'll have to just, like, go with, like, buying a box because they were just, like, on the infield. And it's, like, it was miserable. It was expensive.
I've done both. And the second time I went – we were able to be upstairs in one of the boxes, and I don't ever want to go again because that's as good as it could get.
Yeah.
And yeah. I've seen the other side when you're even in the stands, not even in the infield. We were in the stands dressed up, hot as hell, in the sun. It was no fun.
My buddy he called me, and he was like, it's an hour and a half line to place a bet, 3-hour line to get a beer.
Yeah.
I'm sweating in this suit. He's like, but I do look good.
That's the thing, is like, can you show up just like actually wear shorts and a t-shirt? Like, will they let you in the facility? Like, does everyone dress up because it's like dress code or just because they want to be seen?
It's if you're in the infield, anything goes.
Oh.
But if you're in like the nice part, you actually have to be dressed up. There's a dress code?
Yeah.
Or you just feel bad?
I was going to say, I don't know if you get removed, but you would definitely stand out and not in a good way. They might say something to you. I don't know.
Because I know everyone wants to dress up and take their pictures and be seen. I understand that. Like, you're supposed to wear your best linen and all that. It just doesn't seem practical for a May event, like, in the South. Like, I know Kentucky's not exactly the South, but, like, it's still the South. And I'm just like, if I ever went, I might be just maybe of the mindset where I would just be like, I'm taking comfort over style, and I just don't want to be hot and sweaty. Because my friends overheated.
Really?
Yeah, like a couple of my friends went together, and one of them overheated and ended up in the van in air condition, like getting like cooled off because apparently the report was the heat, the alcohol, and the gummy got to him, and it took him out of commission. He missed the race.
I'm telling you, we went, the time we went, we were with a big group, and we took a bus. We stayed at somebody's farm in Danville, which is like 45 minutes away from Louisville. We went to Louisville. We're all dressed up. Then they start handing out the tickets, and there was definitely a hierarchy on the tickets, and ours were like, again, in the stands in the sun, and it was like 88 degrees. And we ended up, I gotta tell you, man, I ended up watching the race and everything else in the food court. You know, I was like, I'm not doing this, because I was already like soaking through my suit, and it was horrible.
Seems like one of those events that people feel like they want to go to, but like everyone hates. Like deep down, they're like, outside of the pictures, this is miserable.
Yeah.
Maybe just have a party at your house and dress up in your goofy linen and your goofy hats. Mm-hmm. Seems more practical. Was it worth seeing the horses in person?
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, that's so impressive. I saw more of that the second time. The second time, again, we were upstairs. We were in climate controlled. It was raining, but afterwards, we were able to go down and see the horses and walk through the paddocks and everything. And it's amazing how big they are.
Yeah, they're massive.
It's incredible.
There is a part of me that wants to feel that rumble, but like, yeah.
Just go to Keeneland. Don't go to the Derby.
Yeah, Keeneland's wonderful.
Keeneland's
man.
More low key, and it's a little bit easier to get around.
What's the one in Nashville? Steeplechase?
Yeah, that's like next weekend. You better get on that.
I'm not going, but I've been there before.
I haven't been to that, and it's like right behind my house.
I've been to that before, but I don't think like I can't remember like actually getting up near the horses when they ran those. Like I don't know if I actually did that or not. I remember being there and like tailgating and doing like things with friends, but yeah. I don't know.
I'm with you though, Sam. I think Keeneland feels more like you belong there versus like you just feel like an outsider at Churchill. You really do. There's so much money and tradition and affluency and everything else. You're just a speck in that whole thing.
If Big Baller Bob didn't feel good there, there's no chance that I would make it there. So yeah, I'm not going. And I just heard it was hard to cash tickets and stuff too, and it's just hard to like actually get your money. Which my friend did say won some money. He said he won, I think he said $1,500 on the winner, but like that they had to like basically go and like get special clearance to give that much money, which I thought was kind of crazy. Hmm. So the guy behind him won $8,000. It took him 30 minutes to get him settled up with, which I guess people are just there betting a couple bucks just for fun. I don't know. I don't know.
Wonder if they have like high stakes counters for him.
Maybe,
you know, like bigger bet counters.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I got no interest in going, though, really.
Yeah, it's off my list now, too.
I got offered a trip to go, and I was like, I'm good. I'm going to lay back.
I kind of had some interest later at some point down the road, but after my buddy was like, no, this is terrible. I don't think I got any interest.
Going somewhere just to wait in line seems like a bad idea. Like I feel that same way about music festivals, which I don't know how expensive the Derby is when it comes to like the premier seating and everything, but like, I've made the decision, if I ever go to music festivals, I'm just paying the VIP. Like that's what I'd do, just to get the tent, get the air conditioning, at least in the bathrooms, smaller lines, drinks, because I went to one general admission festival, and it was miserable. Just spent literally an hour just in line to try to get a food or water, like or a drink. Like, it was miserable. Just pony up and pay the extra money is where I'm at. But, like, probably can't do that at the Derby unless you're willing to drop four figures, I would say.
Pony up and pay the extra money at the Derby, attaboy, John.
Thank you. Anything else?
Alabama continues to land some big names in the transfer portal as Rutgers transfer center Clifford Omiyuri, probably the top big man left in the portal. He committed to Alabama, over North Carolina, Georgetown, and Kansas State. That's a big get for Nate Oates. He's definitely rounding out that roster, and it seems like they are loading back up. If they can get Mark Sears back for next year, Alabama will definitely be one of the top teams in the SEC to look out for.
I think they're a top two or three team nationally if Sears comes back. Yeah. I mean, he's loaded. Yeah. This is a better team than last year's if Sears is there. Scary.
I like sports villains. So I like having somebody to root against. So I guess it'll be nice to just be able to hate Alabama really extra hard this year.
That dude averages 3 blocks a game, pretty much. I've not seen that. He had to be one of the top couple in the country, block shots.
That's what they desperately needed, was a big man that could protect the rim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all they needed.
If he can run and dunk, then that's a really, really big pickup. And that's sickening. That's sickening. Anything else?
That's about it.
I should have said nay like a horse.
Speaking of the Derby, though, record $210.7 million wagered. Oof. For just the Derby race itself.
At
the Derby?
Yeah, at the Derby or across the country?
Probably across the country. $320 million bet on the entire Derby Day card. So, because they start the races like at 10 in the morning that day.
Yeah, they go all day.
Boy, do we love our gambling.
No doubt.
As a country. Boy, do we. Ryan Shumpert in line to come on at 8:20?
Yep, Shump will be with us.
Ryan Shumpert, Rocky Top Insider, a little RTI read and react. Some more polls coming in. Do we care about the Rawlings Sports? I guess it's Perfect Game. I guess Rawlings Sports sponsored it. Do we care about Perfect Game? That's a reputable ranking, yeah. Right?
Any ranking that has us at one is definitely reputable.
They got Tennessee at one as well. So I don't know if we're headed for being like the unanimous number one team, but number one. No Vanderbilt, no LSU, no Florida in these rankings either. South Carolina at 16, but when you look at the old SEC teams that used to kind of run the conference, they've all kind of taken big steps back.
No LSU's kind of surprised. I don't remember what they were ranked coming into the week, but a win over A&M feels like you'd stay in the rankings.
I don't think they were in there. I think they'd fallen out. I mean, yeah, their conference like record was pretty bad going into the week.
They're playing better ball right now, though.
No, they are. They're probably a team that if you're an LSU fan, you're talking about like the Ole Miss team from a couple years ago that was the last team in that got hot. So, that's what I would be thinking if I was an LSU fan. Although, blowing that Sunday game was a little demoralizing because they were up, and then A&M hung a bunch of runs on them in one inning. A little demoralizing there, but.
Hey, quick note. Just got to make a comment on. We talked a lot about Tennessee. I love the black uniforms.
Yeah, I like the helmets that they've rolled out too. The black helmets.
The jersey, the hat, the helmet. I love it. It looked like villains wearing black.
I can't wait for our new uniforms next year.
Do you feel like we do a good job with the baseball uniforms?
I don't know.
I feel like we leave a little bit out there.
I think there's a lot left out there. I think you could have some of the best jerseys in the country.
I do get the feeling when I watch them. It looks good. I like the orange. I like the black. I like the gray. I like the color schemes, the creams and all that. But just feels a little, I don't want to say generic, but it feels like you could spice them up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Do something cooler.
I don't like those dark gray unis, though.
No.
Looks like a softball team.
I'm a big fan of, script lettering on baseball jerseys, so yeah. I don't like our block letters and just, only the block T on the jersey. I just think you could have something that looks, a little more traditional that kind of,
yeah.
I don't know.
The cream with the script falls is pretty sweet.
I think that's
beautiful.
Say.
Yeah.
Little RTI read and react coming up next. Stick with us. Do I deduct points from you, Sam, or is that Fox National that messed that up?
That's Fox National.
Okay.
Sure.
Can we get them on the line and tell them to tighten it up a little bit? That happens way too often.
It's been happening for a long time, honestly.
This RTI Read and React brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. Don't put off your dental visits any longer. Dr. Stephen Malone and his staff, they want to help give you the best dental care that you can possibly get in Knoxville. That's because they take pride in listening to and communicating with their patients. From routine dental cleanings to teeth removal, restorative procedures, Invisalign veneers, they can do it all at Knoxville Smiles. Contact them today at 865-539-1776 to set up an appointment. You can take a virtual tour of their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility at KnoxvilleSmiles.com. KnoxvilleSmiles.com. I smile when I talk to my friend Ryan Shumpert, Rocky Top Insider. Ryan, top of the morning to you.
Good morning. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Tennessee, the number one team in the country in the polls releasing this morning. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd say I definitely agree that they should be the number one team in the country. To me, it feels like Tennessee, Texas A&M, and Arkansas are all really, really similar, are really, really close to each other. But I definitely think when you look at how Tennessee's playing right now, and obviously Texas A&M gets swept at LSU, Arkansas drops a series to Kentucky, I definitely feel like Tennessee is deserving and should be the top team in the country in all the rankings and polls this morning.
Now, do you actually think Tennessee is the best team in the country?
To me, that's where it becomes harder. I feel like I trust Arkansas's pitching maybe a little bit more. But that's also the difference between college baseball and college football or college basketball, where I watch a lot of these games, especially college basketball, because Tennessee, you know, a basketball game doesn't take all day, and there's other games being played on nights where Tennessee doesn't. College baseball, I've probably watched Arkansas play a small handful of times this season, and then A&M play, I think, maybe twice. I watched the final five innings of their game against LSU on Saturday night after the Tennessee game, and that was one of the only times I've watched them this season. So it's a little bit harder to say. I think Tennessee does still have some questions, but again, I think that it's very, very close, very, very tight between Tennessee and the Aggies and Razorbacks.
Hey, Ryan, good morning. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier about the games this weekend against Florida. I'd be interested in your take on your biggest takeaway from this series. I mean, it felt like the bats, it's understating it, the bats got healthy in that last game, but we also felt there was some real pitching strength that we saw there as well. But what do you, for you, what was your biggest takeaway from the series?
I think my biggest takeaway for the series is it felt like Tennessee didn't play very well for 2.5 games and hand up run rolling game three, winning the series. And I know it's against the Florida team that's underachieved a bit this year, but a really talented Florida team on the road. And I think that continues to just show how good this team can be and how high their ceiling is, because like you said, the pitching, it's just been exceptional really for now what's been half of conference play. I mean, they lost 14 conference games, which goes back to that series opener at Auburn that they lost. They're averaging 3.5 runs per game. They've got it figured out. They've got it rolling. AJ Causey's been great. Aaron Combs has been great. Nate Snead, after what I wouldn't have called a bad 2 weeks, but maybe a little bit more shaky 2 weeks compared to how good he was early in the season, was fantastic on Saturday night in the series finale. And then it just showed that the bats, even when they're not in a great weekend and they're a little bit cool, boom, you snap your fingers just like that. They can explode, score 11 runs in one inning, 14 over two innings, and turn a deficit into a run rule victory just like that. So you continue to see how high the ceiling is. And, you know, I'd say even, you know, I talked about them maybe not playing great this weekend. It wasn't even just the offense in those first, you know, couple games. They made a handful of defensive miscues that were uncharacteristic and maybe cost them the game. Game two at a doubleheader on Friday and cost them another run in the game on Saturday. So you're seeing Tennessee not play their best and still go on the road and win a series against a good team. I think it says a lot about just how talented this team is. And when you combine the talent of that lineup, which is as good as about any in the country, and you pair it with a pitching staff that just continues to get better and better as they go through the season, I think there's a lot to be excited about with this team.
Tennessee, number 8 right now in ERA. You talked about their pitchers. You did not mention A.J. Russell. Do we have any updates on him and when we can expect him to return to game action?
Well, we don't have anything official or anything like that. He's getting close to being able to throw some, not necessarily pitch, you know, not necessarily a bullpen session, but be able to throw a little bit. To me, it almost if they get anything from A.J. Russell this year, I think it's gravy. I don't think there's hardly any chance that he gets worked back up into a starter-type role. But even if he can just be a guy that comes in and throws 25 pitches as kind of a high-leverage bullpen arm, I think that could go a long way, because I do think that's something, you know, a high velo, elite stuff, late-inning guy Tennessee doesn't necessarily have right now, because they're using a guy like Nate Snead as kind of a long relief. So I think that would go a long way just into filling a role and also giving Tennessee some versatility and some flexibility, I guess, more than versatility, in the way Tony Vitello and Frank Anderson handle this pitching stuff.
Ryan, can you talk about that opener role a little bit and the success that Tennessee has started to have with that? It felt like this weekend was almost a flawless execution of that plan, kind of with, you know, you get Stamos and then you lead him into Causey, and then, you know, in game three, you've got Seacrest leading into an unbelievable outing from Nate Snead. So it really feels like they've started to feel good about that opener role and then, you know, leading into a big reliever. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
They have, and it's funny. I was talking about this with somebody yesterday that almost feels like maybe their two best starting pitchers are guys that don't start, and Nate Snead and A.J. Causey, and how good those guys have been. And for a long time, we've heard Tony Vitello talk about kind of against the conventional wisdom of pitching roles in baseball, and it's always been revolved around the closer spot, and how in college baseball and, you know, a 60-game season, it doesn't make sense to have some, you know, your best bullpen arm be locked in as a closer, because the most important moment in a game can come here or there. But in in those conversations, he talks about a lot about you're not necessarily looking, you're just looking for guys to get out. And I think you're seeing the fulfillment of that on the other end of the season, where some of Tennessee's best arms, they might not be starting the game, but they're the guy that Tennessee expects to eat the most out in that game, and that's how they're using them. And I think it kind of is twofold. With Stamos on Friday, obviously Causey had some struggles. Lefties really have the ability to get to Causey, and by starting Stamos, Tennessee feels like that, you know, takes away a little bit of an opponent's ability to just stack lefties in the lineup and gives a little bit more of a balanced lineup that Causey's going to see entering a weekend. And then on the other side with Xander, he's a guy that's just really never been a bullpen guy. Since his whole career, he's been a midweek starter. They feel like that's the role he's most comfortable in. And so they feel like he's very capable of going out there and getting them 6-9 to even a handful of times. He's gotten them, 15 outs in a game this season. But they like him in a starter spot, and then they can go to Snead. And Snead's a guy that they like to kind of use a little bit like they used Sean Hundley a couple years ago in 21, where they can piece it together. They can use him on a Friday night and turn around and maybe use him on Sunday too. So it gives them a lot of flexibility how they use Snead, who's perhaps their most talented pitcher on this staff of A.J. Russell's sideline. So it kind of is interesting how it works out in different ways. And you're right. I mean, it was nearly flawless this weekend. I really liked how they went with kind of a quick hook on Xander, even though he'd had a good second inning, a 1-2-3 second inning in game three on Saturday night. It was still a rocky first inning. They talked about going into the week how Snead was really built up. They hadn't thrown him a ton the last two weekends. They knew he could give him a lot of innings, and obviously in a run roll, he got him to the finish line.
Appreciate Tennessee Williams for sharing this with us on X, but it's a breakdown of ERA and runs scored and kind of combining that. There are two teams in the country that are top 10 in both, Tennessee and A&M. Tennessee 8th in ERA, 3rd in runs scored for an average of 5.5. A&M 7th in ERA, 6th in runs scored for an average of 6.5. No one else, you know, even close in terms of having both top 10. Arkansas, for comparison's sake, number 1 in ERA, number 100 in runs scored. So it does feel to me, Ryan, like Tennessee and A&M maybe have the claim to kind of being ahead of the rest of the pack, especially when you can combine that with being in the SEC against the SEC schedule.
Yeah, and I think you talk about the ceiling of those two teams is a lot higher. I mean, I think Arkansas's pitching, not just being number 1 in the country, I think is probably by a decent margin number 1 in the country. So it feels like their floor is really high, but they do have a little bit of the feel of Tennessee last year, where the pitching's so good, you feel confident that could probably get them to Omaha, but it's just kind of an uncertainty whether the offense is going to be good enough to make a deep run in Omaha and to make it and potentially win a national championship, where it feels like we get weak, you know, we go on every week, and Tennessee's pitching continues to figure more and more stuff out. And you combine that with what's such an explosive offense that, to me, the conversation is fully changed, and it changed before this weekend, too, as to whether this team can make it to Omaha, to how far, how many games can this team win in Omaha. Is this a team that could potentially win a national championship?
Let's switch gears. Let's talk some other Tennessee sports. Ben Hammonds, not set to come visit Tennessee anymore. That was the point guard that Tennessee was getting in the mix on at the end of this recruiting cycle. Any news there? Just Tennessee setting their sights somewhere else, or do we know?
I'm not really sure what the situation is with him and how that all broke down. I think it's, and we've talked about it, but it's similar to what Tennessee deals with, you know, trying to find a backup quarterback, where you're looking for a very specific fit here when you're trying to find the guy, because you just know that Zakai Ziegler is going to, when games start to matter late in the season, he's going to play over 35 minutes, and there's not going to be a huge role for anyone else. But to me, it continues to become really fascinating. We know Chaz Lanier is a guy Tennessee's going to target heavily, a guy that they really want, but there's not a ton of other names floating around out there, and it does feel like those two other spots, if Tennessee would land Lanier, would be more kind of bench filler developmental pieces. Who do they find? Because it feels like we've seen a few names bounce around, but there's never been a ton of traction with any of that. So I think that's going to be kind of curious to see, and I think it almost has gotten to the point where, to me, I'm not totally sure Tennessee's even going to fill out the full 13 scholarships by the end of the summer. It might be something where they go into the season with one scholarship available.
Well, personally, like, I saw the comparisons. You couldn't help but compare Ben Hammond to Zakai Ziegler. But personally, I don't want to get in the habit of always having an undersized point guard. Like, Zakai is kind of an outlier. I don't want to get in the habit of that. So maybe Rick Barnes kind of felt the same way. Anything else in football? Anything making news right now?
Not a ton in the football world. I mean, they're making their way through the Big Orange Caravan right now, and it's been a lot of coach speak, as you would expect, some joking around. But no, not a ton going on. I guess you continue to, while transfer portal is closed, you continue to monitor to see maybe Tennessee could potentially, you know, look to add somebody. It feels like the defensive back room, a cornerback specifically, would be the most likely spot that they would look to add somebody. But it feels like stuff's been pretty quiet there, and certainly a very, very quiet spring portal period for Tennessee as they get set to start summer workouts.
Talking about coach speak, I'm going to jump back to basketball for a second. And Coach Barnes, you put a piece on RTI, RockyTopInsider.com, about, and we've talked about it on the show, but I wanted to get your take about what Rick Barnes said about Felix Akpara. And the whole notion, as he put it, he brings us a physicality that we love to have and haven't consistently had there. You have covered Coach for a long time. You get more of his sound bites than any of us do. We're over here hoping that was a bit of a troll by Rick. What do you think that was? I mean, was he just stating the facts of what he likes about Akpara, but do you think he's got it in him to get a little dig in as well on the outgoing guy?
You know, I don't know if I necessarily call it a dig, because Rick's a guy that's going to say what he wants. But he's also smart enough to, you know, not take shots a lot of times. And I'm not necessarily sure he'd call this a shot, but I think it's one of those things where he's not saying it to take a shot, to take a dig at Jonas or Tobe, but he doesn't care. That's how he feels, and he doesn't care to upset anybody by saying it, because there's no downside for him at this point of saying it. So that's kind of how I see it, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
it was certainly an interesting comment for sure.
Yeah, just stating the fact, right? And then people can do what we did. They can run with it how they want, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, sometimes Rick will feel away and he's not going to say it because he feels like it has downside. So it isn't, you know, just as simple as a guy that always says how he's feeling, because he's smart enough to know that sometimes saying how he's feeling is not the smartest thing to do in the media. But this one, I don't think he, at this point, I don't think he cares if he ruffles a few feathers in those camps by saying something like that.
All right, on the way out, Ryan, we've been asking the question, how many wins in these final six SEC games for the baseball team? They go at Vanderbilt this weekend and then finish it up next weekend at home against South Carolina.
Oh, man. I'll say five. I say they get a sweep in there, and then they win two out of three in the other. That's against my conventional wisdom of always saying just take care of business and win series against solid teams. But just if it's two teams that Tennessee's had a lot of success against under Tony Vitello, goodness knows Vanderbilt's playing really poorly right now. I just feel like Tennessee will get a sweep in one and get a series win in the other.
If negative Ryan Shumpert is saying five wins, hell, Tennessee might win seven of the next six. Anything you're working on, Rocky Top Insider?
Nothing specifically, you know, the long form side, but I'm hoping to write on Wednesday after we talk to Tony on Tuesday night following the game, just kind of the designated hitter conundrum Tennessee's in right now. That's kind of the one negative side of what's going on. They just can't find any sort of consistent production from that group and a number of guys that they've rotated through. And, you know, they've rotated players there throughout the season, especially as of late. And it just no hits from that group this weekend. And I think maybe only one or two guys reached base at all. So it's a big question mark to me, probably the biggest question mark with the team right now. And I'm hoping to get some quotes from Tony, and hopefully he'll give us some good stuff on it on Tuesday. And then I'm going to kind of dig into the numbers of where things have flipped and how the certain guys have struggled and how that's kind of a key for Tennessee's lineup, finding an extra gear and getting back to being the absolute best like it was earlier in the season.
Did he have any comments after the game on Saturday about benching Backus after one at-bat?
He did. He talked about matchups a little bit and how with tags, you know, change up the way he had that working, he felt like it didn't make a ton of sense. And you know, obviously the changeup part was the development that happened in the game. But, you know, my thing was, Caglione wasn't a good matchup for Kobe Becks to begin with. You know, it's the high-end fastball that you worry about with Becks because he kind of has a long swing. So if you're going to start him in what, to me, already wasn't a great matchup, it didn't make sense to pull him after one at bat. But I haven't, you know, coached a team that a baseball program that traditionally wasn't very good to the number one team in the country for the second time in 3 years. So, and I don't make $1.5 million a year to do it. So he gets paid the big bucks, and I'm sure he had good reasoning for it.
Yeah, I thought it was the lack of hustle in the field. I thought his play in right field, not backing up the Amick miss throw, was really why he got benched. I was curious if he had any quotes on that, but not good of him.
No, he didn't mention that, yeah. But that's an interesting theory too.
Yeah, good of him not to bury the kid. Do you have a name that you would pick right now at DH, or is it just going to be matchup dependent? Because I kind of would like to just have one person versus a platoon, but it seems like Tennessee's not going to be able to figure that out between now and the postseason.
I just roll with Dalton Bargo. Maybe if you want to throw somebody else in there with lefties, sure, but I just feel like Bargo is the most talented guy of that group. He is the best hitter of the group. He's the guy that I have the most confidence in is going to figure it out and get back to hitting at a high level. So if it was me, I would just be trying to force feed him as many at-bats as possible to hope that he figures it out and gets back into the groove like he did early in the season, because he's the guy that I trust the most out of that group.
Ryan Shumpert, appreciate your time every Monday. Hope you enjoy your week, my friend.
Appreciate it, guys. Talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Ryan.
RockyTopInsider.com, rshump00 on X. Follow him. Follow Rocky Top Insider. Great job covering the series this past weekend, and I'm sure they'll do it again this upcoming week as the number one team in the country, your Tennessee Volunteers. Try to keep it rolling. It's got a nice ring to it. Number one in the country. All right, Sam, send us a break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Volunteers. It does have a nice ring to it.
Think about that. I'm sorry to cut you off. If you think about it, well, basketball maybe not, but we've had football ranked number one in about the last year and a half, right? Baseball number one. Basketball right up there, maybe not number one. Like you were saying earlier, it's just good times, good vibes for Vols fans right now. If we can just do something in the postseason, that'd be awesome.
You got to number two in the country 2 years ago with basketball.
Yeah.
I don't really remember when that happened, but you got to number two in the country. You've been ranked in the top six 4 years in a row in basketball at some point. So you're just looking at your highest ranking. If you go back to even 6 years, of course, that was the year you were ranked number one. COVID year, the highest you got were 17th. You weren't very good that year. But every other year, you've been in the top six in basketball. That's kind of crazy. Wasn't all good for you, though, Sam. Your Preds, I saw. Sorry for your loss on Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that 0-3 in Nashville?
Yeah, man. 0-3 in Nashville. Didn't win a game at home.
You guys can't win at home, huh?
No, they can't. I mean, I think that's
Smashville.
I don't have the number.
Run
on
this
me.
Town.
It's
Catfish.
We've lost it.
0-3.
We've lost it at home.
Sent home. Good thing, or you're already at home. Bags, didn't have to pack your bags. You're yeah. Just already at the crib.
I want to say that's six straight home losses for them.
Oof.
In the playoffs, it's Oof. Not good. It's not good. It's really. It's embarrassing, honestly, just to have that, like, what people used to think of as, like, you know, people used to kind of identify the Preds as, like, oh, it's a tough defensive team with a good goalie, and they're going to, you know, they're going to have a nice environment. It's going to be a tough place to play. And you just, you know, just didn't bring it this year. Weren't really supposed to. I think you were playing with house money kind of being in those playoffs anyway with a young team, but.
Did it feel like house money?
No, once you get in there.
Yeah, I was going to say, can't it feel like house money whenever, like, the series was so close that you just couldn't make any clutch plays?
And you should have won. I mean, like, you lost the series in six, but it feels like you could have won it in six easily, too.
Could have won it in five.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was that. And it was just a gross game. I mean, 0-0 for the longest time. They score with a couple minutes left.
Preds almost scored two at the end, right? Like,
yeah,
there was a
yeah, they did.
Complete melee, like, right in front of the net in the last, like, 30 seconds, it felt like.
Yeah. Just a tough ending.
Six in a row, is that true? Six in a row?
Let me try and find these numbers. That's something nasty.
That's really bad if it's six in a row at home in the playoffs. Of course, we know it's three in a row, and they lost that series. That's tough. That's tough. On a more positive note, Bob, you you are still locked in. You're in that nice zone of your baseball team's number one in the country, and also your professional basketball team still in the playoffs. How are you feeling?
I feel pretty good. I feel like we got the Knicks right where we want them, because everybody's picking the Knicks in five, Knicks in six. It's probably not a bad bet, but I think, hey, I'm coming in with some optimism. We'll see what happens tonight. That'll tell the tale, I think. You know, I don't want to put too much pressure on a game one because the Pacers got ran out in game one against Milwaukee. This is going to be different, though. If they lose this one, I think it's the pressure starts to mount pretty quickly.
I don't think tonight's that important for the Pacers. I mean, it does always feel like game one's maybe the most attainable game if you're going to try to steal one on the road. Right. But, you know, I think if you're the Pacers, your goal tonight, if I'm Rick Carlisle, is just to run the Knicks as much as possible. And, like, you hope that the Thibodeau minutes can catch up to them, because you look at the game six in Philly, like, their three best players played 45 minutes at least in all of them, between Brunson and Hart and Dante. So, like, maybe you're hoping, like, hey, let's just run. Let's speed them up. And hopefully by, like, game five, game six, game seven, they start getting a little broken down. Like, that would be my goal if I'm Rick Carlisle.
No, I think so. I mean, I think it's that clash of styles for sure. You know, Pacers are all about tempo and, you know, pace. And the Knicks are about physicality and grind. And, you know, if the Pacers can dictate that tempo a little bit, they've definitely – that's one area I do feel they have an edge, and that's depth. They can run a number of guys out there that the Knicks don't have. The one thing that's a variable that I'm a little bit concerned about is Jalen Brunson's so good already. He doesn't need to have a chip on his shoulder, but it's well chronicled that he, you know, he and Carlisle had a different point of view on his abilities way back when in Dallas. So that makes me worry a little bit, I got to be honest.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you need storyline, Sam, for this playoff series, you got the report coming out this weekend that Jalen Brunson has beef with Rick Carlisle. Of course, Rick Carlisle coaching the Pacers, Jalen Brunson the star point guard of the Knicks, but talked about getting benched in Game 7 in 2021 in their Game 7 loss to the Clippers. Mm-hmm. Jalen Brunson only played 10 minutes and says he feels a type of way about that. So really, he wasn't going to try to win the playoff series and go to the conference finals before them, but now that he sees his old coach on the other sideline, now he's going to try really hard to score points.
If I wasn't already locked in, I am now.
Yeah. You're not locked in. Nah, it's – we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm, again, very – you know, got to be a fan and have some optimism tonight, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be very, very tough to think Pacers can win. I haven't seen a single media person or anybody picking the Pacers to win that series, and I get it. So we'll just have to see. Let's shock the world.
Yeah, shock the world, Bob. Come on. Yeah. Everybody loves an underdog.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm rooting for the Knicks. No, maybe, disrespect to Bob, but I'm just saying, like you say, everyone loves an underdog. No, not always.
As long as they lose the next series. I want to see some New York heartbreak at some point.
Well, I want somebody to beat the Celtics is, like, what I want. And, like, I don't want to see the Pacers in the finals. Again, no disrespect, Bob. No disrespect to Reggie Miller and Jermaine O'Neal. I used to love Ron Artest and Steven Jackson. I dabbled as a Pacers fan a little bit back in my youth, but, like, I don't want to see that team in the finals. No thanks. I want the Knicks-Celtics bloodbath in games in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's what I want. So
yeah.
I'm actually rooting for the Knicks to kind of get through there and be fresh. Because my NBA most hated team is the Celtics. Like, I don't like them. So I need somebody to beat them, and I don't think the Pacers could do that. So I'm hoping they just kind of bow out and don't make the Knicks tired or hurt. Again, no disrespect to my friend Bob, but if the Pacers do win, I'll be happy you're happy. I don't have any money on the Knicks or anything. It's just, from my hating standpoint, my purpose is making sure the Celtics don't win a championship.
Yeah, and the Pacers, you know, that's a lot of look ahead, but Pacers don't match up with Boston at all. That would be pretty fait accompli if they go and meet the Celtics. It'd be the Celtics on the way to the finals.
To me, it feels like, and again, as a hater, really trying to make sure the Celtics don't win a championship. I see Denver, they're vulnerable. I look at the East, I don't think the Knicks or Pacers are good enough. I think the Cavs are going to probably get swept or losing five to the Celtics. Like, I feel like all my energy is going to have to go behind Anthony Edwards, like if somebody's going to beat them. And that's fine with me. Like, yeah, you know, my favorite player in the league right now, future Atlanta Hawk, Anthony Edwards. But, like, I don't want to, like, put all my eggs in that basket because he is only 22, and usually 22-year-olds don't win and lead their team to a championship. Yeah. Maybe Donovan Mitchell. Maybe Spider. That game 7 yesterday, you know, you talk about things as fans and what feels good and proving people wrong. In an actual, like, one-game throwaway or one-game sample, like, I do still think the come-from-behind victory is the best. So, like, I thought the Cavs fans got the dread of, like, the Magic coming out and jumping out to that early 18-point lead. But then you just storm back and beat them and actually, you know, just kick their ass. You go on, like, a 70-30 run, essentially, down the stretch to beat them and your superstar, Donovan Mitchell, who maybe is going to leave this offseason. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe that team looks different, but at least you didn't lose in the first round. You finally got your first playoff series win without LeBron in a long, long time, and Donovan Mitchell came 1 point short of breaking an NBA playoff record for most points in a game 6 and 7. He had 89, which was only 1 point shy of Allen Iverson, who had 90.
He looked good. I think in that third quarter when – the Cavs really flipped the script on that game. He scored, I think, 18 points in the third quarter. I don't know why. There, for some reason, I found ways to not like Donovan Mitchell, and I'm not sure why, really. I was happy for him yesterday. They look good, and we've stated this before, but man, Paolo Banchero, he's a stud already, but I mean, his upside is pretty amazing. He looked great, particularly in the first half. Franz Wagner was the one that really hurt the Magic, in my opinion. 1 of 15 from the field. That was a killer. Averages 20 points a game, only got 6. That was a problem.
Yeah, their role players weren't ready for game 7. The role players for the Magic weren't ready for game 7. It was really just Paolo against the world. And he was awesome, and he's at that same place where Anthony Edwards, I think, was a couple years ago, and I think Paolo's going to be just fine. But, like, it's crazy. There are, from what I saw, a report, a stat, a tweet, only six starters left in the playoffs over the age of 30.
Wow. Whoa.
It is a –
that's wild.
Yeah, it is a movement to youth. Like, we knew that kind of from a star perspective, but, hell, even just from a starting standpoint, only 6 guys – according to SportsCenter, so I mean, this is should be a legitimate tweet. Only 6 starters remain in the playoffs older than 30. Can you name them, Bob? Sam, you can help too. Jace, feel free to hop in.
Over the age of 30.
Over the age of 30.
Well, Jokic.
Nope. Jokic is only like 27. Over one, really? Bob. All right, you're out, Sam.
Jokic isn't 30?
No, Nicole Jokic is young, man. 27 might be a little young, but
yeah. Probably.
And he might be older than 30, so maybe he has 30, but like maybe 27 was a little low, but he is not on this list. He is 29, turns 30 in February. So you're out, Jason. Sam, you have to carry the torch.
Is Porzingis 30?
He is not on this list. I don't know if it's because of injury or because he's not 30, but he's also somebody that's kind of young, so maybe you're out. Let's see if Jace can.
It's just teams that are left after
– teams that are left, yeah. Oh. Porzingis is only 28, by the way. God, feels like he's been around forever,
so
too,
long.
But only 28.
Did he get drafted?
Miles Turner, is he that old?
Nope. All right, 0 for 3. Good job, guys.
Hey, I got one.
Okay, let's go.
Mike Conley.
Mike Conley, there you go. Like, all right, Bob, come on, redeem yourself. Let's go. Carry the torch.
Okay, well, now it's hard. Good Lord. I can't think.
Pascal Siakam.
Okay.
Drew Holiday.
What about Rudy Gobert?
Rudy Gobert. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And Kyrie Irving.
I was going to say Kyrie, too. Yeah,
Kyrie is like 31, I think, but it feels like he's one of those guys that still looks the exact same as when he came in the league.
It does.
For the most part, like game and everything. Like he hasn't lost the athleticism or handle yet. When they actually zoom in on his face, you can see some years and some stress there and everything, but I still think of him as that young, flashy kid because he still plays that way, and he's been awesome. But, yeah, Gobert, Conley, so the former Jazz connection that's now in Minnesota taking care of business. Conley, I thought, was really great in the third quarter, keeping them in that game. Siakam, Drew Holiday, Kyrie, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and everybody else is 30 or younger.
Speaking of Kyrie, real quick, before we hit break, they win that elimination game against the Clippers. What happens to the Clippers in the offseason? I mean, they could totally disband, right? I mean, Paul George maybe going somewhere. Ty Lue maybe going somewhere.
Paul George is going to be the probably most sought-after free agent. Now, whether or not Ballmer throws a supermax at him to keep him and, you know, overpays him like the home team can is yet to be seen. If I'm Ballmer, you can't really lose him for nothing. But, like, you also know the team has to be a little different. So maybe I'm working hard for a sign-and-trade somewhere. But, no, Paul George, like, should be able to demand a bunch of money either from Orlando, who needs a player like him, Philadelphia, who needs a player like him. You can always use the talented wings that could play both ways. But, hell, even Paul George is in year 14, which is crazy to think. He's getting up there in age, too. And I just told you it's a young man's game. So if I'm the Clippers, I'm trying to find some youth somewhere. But they're kind of maxed out. They're in trouble. They're in trouble. Hour two in the books. We'll kick off hour three with some winners and losers of the weekend. Stick with us.